Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court. The appellant is requesting this court for an order remanding this matter to the back to the court below to permit him to withdraw his plea of guilty. There is cited in my brief legal authority for this. The holding in Gomez-Orozco, I think, is particularly helpful to our position. Being legally innocent of a crime is a fair and just reason to withdraw the plea. The claim must be supported by credible evidence. In Gomez, the issue is whether or not the parents were married by common law to determine whether or not the defendant was an alien, just as our mental health claim is in dispute here.
But I don't see how you can say there's any evidence of his legal innocence just because of this bundling fee possibility once he says he's billed for people who didn't see him.
Well, on that issue, which is certainly different than the mental health issue, we would have to be able to demonstrate that the rules, in fact, demonstrated a prorated system of billing, or that the rules were ambiguous to the degree they would not support a criminal conviction, or that his interpretation of those rules was reasonable.
All of which were things the district court held he could have alerted the court to at the time he originally pleaded guilty.
That's correct.
So, guilty pleas, as we've pointed out, are not just a dress rehearsal. You have to tell the court if you have some reason why you think a guilty plea is not appropriate.
And I'd like to address probably the mental health, which I think has fewer of those warts attached to it, in my view. I think we put in our brief a response to the concern that he was aware of that, aware of the rules with regard to fee for service, but the appellant, I think, submitted highly credible evidence to support the claim that he lacked the requisite intent to commit the crimes as the result of a mental disability. The reports and testimony of all the doctors and Dr. Athey, I thought, was particularly compelling, but so was Dr. Chapman and Dr. Zeck in the report, even though Dr. Zeck did not testify, that Rinaldi could not formulate criminal intent due to mental disability. Athey held this opinion with a reasonable degree of neuropsychological certainty. Athey is a neuropsychologist, and he was the only neuropsychologist among the group of people who evaluated the appellant. A neuropsychologist is trained to administer tests to determine either psychiatrically or in an organic sense whether the person has an organic brain disease or a psychiatric illness, and then to determine how, based on testing, that impacts the person's day-to-day functioning. Dr. Athey conducted what I would consider to be extensive tests over 3 days, far more than anyone else in this case did. And, of course, they weren't trained to give neuropsychological tests anyway. Dr. Athey found no malingering, nor did any other doctor. Dr. Athey found no antisocial characteristics and found no narcissism. Dr. Bornstein was the only doctor who found that. Athey's test demonstrated impairments in executive functioning, processing, and decision-making, and he found support for his concerns in the brain imaging that was done at the Hoagland Brain Imaging Center at Kansas University Medical Center. The brain imaging found mild to moderate cerebral atrophy, mild paraventricular white matter disease, likely related to small vessel ischemia.
But, you're approaching this as though we're the first finder of fact, and there were other facts in the record the district court relied on to say that he was not convinced that Dr. Rinaldi's ability to form an intent was so diminished that he couldn't satisfy the criminal law standard. And it seems to me that's what you really need to discuss. Why were the district court looked at the fact that he had a successful orthodontry practice, looked at the fact that nobody disagreed that he had the intent, he was able to stand trial, cooperate with his counsel. I mean, there are a lot of things the district court looked at.
Well, as far as cooperating with his counsel, I think, and as part of the short appendix, part of my motion to the original motion to reconsider the plea withdrawal, the letter I sent to Dr. Chapman, identifies very specifically the problems that I saw we were having with Dr. Athey and his Dr. Rinaldi and his ability to communicate. And that list is, I don't know that I can read that to you.
But you don't have to read it.
It included many of the items of concern here. I realize the finder of fact denied the motion. He did not ever determine that our evidence was not credible in denying the motions. It seemed to me what the trier of fact did at the court below was make a determination that he believed the government evaluators over the appellant's evaluators. And I don't think that's the test under Gomez or Grolo. The test should be whether or not credible evidence was presented to support a claim of actual innocence. Rusin would demonstrate that it would be a claim of actual innocence.
That would be true if we're in a vacuum, but as Judge Wood pointed out, that finding was not delivered in a vacuum. There are other evidence pieces of it. Doesn't he take those into consideration, or does he only have to focus in on the psychiatric evidence or psychological evidence offered by the defendant?
Well, according to the I think it's the Grohl case, if that in that case the holding in Grohl was that the person had a claim of actual innocence because they were claiming entrapment.
No, back to where I was. Okay. If your position is correct, all the defendant has to do is introduce some medical evidence that he was innocent. That is, that he was lacked some evidence, which even if refuted, it still makes it necessary that the judge withdraw the plea of guilty.
Yes, I think that's what Orozco says. If the evidence presented by the appellant is credible, it has to be credible evidence.
We're back to our beginning. Is that considered in a vacuum? Or is the judge entitled to listen to other evidence that's contrary to that?
Certainly, but I think if the court...
Well, in arriving at his conclusion that he thought the defendant should not be able to withdraw his plea of guilty, that there is no demonstration, sufficient demonstration of actual innocence because of the totality of the evidence being introduced by the two parties.
I think probably the court could do that, although...
Well, that's what the court did. Now go from there.
Well, I don't think the court... I think the court was wrong in assessing the totality of the evidence in that the evidence was credible that was presented, and the fact that it was refuted in Orozco, that was disputed. It was refuted in Grohl, that was not conceded. It was disputed in Rusin. I mean, those cases, particularly Orozco, Gomez-Orozco, it was disputed. And the court in Gomez-Orozco said, look, if it's possible that a jury might find that his alienage is in question and acquit him, then that should be the result. So actually, I'm not sure. I guess I should back up on the answer I gave you, because as I'm thinking about Gomez-Orozco, it said if it's possible.
You're in your
Oops, lights. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dawson. Mr. Henson.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Mr. Dawson. If I may make a quick point regarding Gomez. That was a claim of legal innocence. We're not talking about a claim of legal innocence here. I believe we're talking about a defense. The defendant pled guilty and now says, I now have a defense to that. I have something to add to the mix that's now a jury question. In Gomez, if indeed the fact were true, the case goes no further. The defendant is not an alien. It goes no further than that. That is an element. If in this case, sticking with Gomez, if Gomez had said to the court, to this court, I now have a defense that I didn't mean to cross the border, or I couldn't form the intent to cross the border, I think the result would have been much different, because that's a much different question. What the defendant is asking this court to do is ignore the guilty plea, start all over again.
How would lack of ability to form an intent be proved after the adoption of Rule 704B?
Off the top of my head, I'm not familiar with 704B.
Yes, I know. Nobody's brief discusses it, but Rule 704B says that no expert witness can give an opinion in a criminal case regarding the defendant's mental state, whether he's able to form the intent for the crime. I mean, this is part of the legislation Congress enacted after the assassination attempt of President Reagan, which limited the mental state defense basically to the McNaughton defense, and abolished all forms of diminished capacity claims, at least to the extent they were supported by expert evidence. It looks to me like all the expert evidence that Rinaldi offered violates Rule 704B. It's not clear how one would show, in support of a motion to withdraw a guilty plea, inability to form an intent without violating 704B. I just wondered if you had any opinion on this question.
It would strike me that Rule 704B would still allow the, I suppose, the submission of the reports and the submission of the facts without asking that opinion, and then you're left with argument. In this case, several doctors offered several different opinions.
Well, that's another point. Let me ask you a sentencing question. How much notice did the government give Dr. Rinaldi that it was specifically contemplating not just some vague, as it was being phrased, upward departure, but that the fine in particular was going to go from the $40,000 range to the $500,000 range, really up to the statutory maximum?
Thank you for allowing me to address that. It was not something in the opening brief, so it's not something, notice was not something that we were able to specifically...
He complains about the fine, sure.
He does complain about the fine, and I can tell you exactly how much notice. On September 1st of 2005, the government filed a sentencing memorandum, and in that sentencing memorandum, the government specifically asked the court to impose the maximum fine allowed by law.
And did you put a dollar figure on that, or you just said the maximum? And of course, one could look at the law.
Yeah.
I think it was $250,000 per count. So, he knew that $500,000 was in play.
I believe he should have known. If he did not know consciously, we had asked for the maximum fine allowable.
His mental state would not have allowed him to know. I'm sure he would tell us.
Yes.
Yeah. So
actually, when you get to that figure, my mental state staggers too. So $500,000.
So then there's the other question under cases like Dean as to whether the district court judge adequately explained, because as we pointed out in Dean, the further you get from the recommended guidelines range, in some sense, the more thorough your explanation needs to be. And I wouldn't really call Judge Mills' explanation thorough. I mean, it might be enough, but it's too bad it's not more illuminating, I'll say.
Well, I believe Judge Mills recognized that all of the things in front of him. Certainly he had sentencing memorandum in front of him from both sides. He had 3 days of testimony in front of him. He had several almost an hour of argument addressing specifically the factors in 18 U.S.C. 3553. And in sentencing the defendant, Judge Mills was very specific on the factors that he thought were not met. He didn't canvass all the factors, and this court has said he doesn't have to.
But one has the sense, looking at this, that he decides to stay within the recommended guideline range for the prison time, which ends at the top of the range, but that's fine, that's in the range. And he's in a sense trading off, because of the uncertainty created perhaps by Dr. Rinaldi's own conduct, doesn't really see the ability to go above on the months in prison, but figures looking, I mean, it looked to me like he thinks that some of that money, he never says this, but it looks like he thinks some of the money, that $2.3 million, was attributable to this crime. But he never spells any of that out, and that's troublesome to me.
He does say during the sentencing hearing that the 21-month sentence may not be deterrence enough for Dr. Rinaldi. He was very specific as to that. He also said that his fine was consistent with the statutory factors. He was prompted to do that, I admit.
That's all right. But
did so nonetheless because we had just talked about the sentencing factors in arguing before the court. The district court recognized that the defendant bilked the taxpayers out of a lot of money. And because of his actions, that amount couldn't be determined. So that was right in the government's argument as to why a departure was necessary or why a small sentence was not necessary. Now, again,
he doesn't make a finding that the full net worth is the result of criminal activity. It's a little odd to me that the government wasn't able to find alternative evidence of this in the state's records or in Medicaid's records or other. You know, for everything he submitted, there should be a record on the other side.
There is a record as to what was submitted, but there's not necessarily a record of which patients were seen. And when we're talking about children, sometimes 10, 15 years ago, they don't remember if they were seen on a specific date or not. So the only records we had or that could possibly show what the exact amount of loss was were those sign-in sheets and daily logs, which were the first things he took out and presumably destroyed, but I don't know. That was all in his control. It was unfortunately, none of it was in the government's control. Mm-hmm. Unless there are other questions, with the understanding that less is more, I will waive the rest of my time. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Anything further, Mr. Dawson?
Perhaps, Your Honor, I have a few seconds. With respect to the fine, and Mr. Hansen is correct that the government asked for the maximum fine without assigning a number to it, but they did in their sentencing memorandum. The court at page 689 of Volume 3 found that there was no basis for an upward departure, and the court found that the guidelines applied, and then, of course, upward departed on the fine. I think the fine 12 times over that is unreasonable. And we'd ask the court to vacate that. As far as the legal innocence, I think the Grohl case counters any suggestion that appellant does not have a legal claim of legal innocence. In our case, the government had to prove specific intent in their case in chief, while in Grohl, the affirmative defense of entrapment was permitted as a claim of legal innocence to withdraw the plea. So I do believe that we have a claim of legal innocence. Got to go red. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.